We will call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order, and careful mathematical skills would tell us we do not yet have a quorum, but in the interest of time, we're going to call Representative Albright up and have him start running through his bill, and as soon as we get a quorum, we will properly move it and have it in front of us and figure out what we're going to do with it. And we'll wait for a few minutes to approve the last minutes and until we have a quorum for that as well. With that, Representative Albright, if you want to tell us why you're here and what you want us to know about your bill, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am here to present House File 544. Over the past several years, pattern of behavior has become apparent regarding the lack of oversight and accountability at the Commerce Department in the management of the low-income home energy assistance program and the weatherization assistance for low-income persons program. Beginning in 2011 and then again in 2012 and 2013, the Office of the Legislative Office Auditor identified material deficiencies with both state and federal compliance and reporting responsibilities for both of these programs. As legislators, our duty is to assure the citizens of this state that those entrusted with the responsibility to administer these programs carry out those responsibilities to the best possible outcome. House File 544 is a response to that responsibility. Over the past several years, the OLA and other agencies have examined the efficacy of the Commerce Department in administering LIHEAP and the weatherization program. It is this pattern of ineffective administration of both the federal and state appropriations that makes it necessary for this body to take action to ensure that these programs are fulfilling their mandates under the law and to provide the opportunity for needy families to stay warm and safe. At this point, I think it's incumbent that I refer to your packets and several documents that are in the jackets. I would trust that you have copies of the OLA reports from 2011, 2012, and 2013. In addition, a DHS review that was undertaken on 7 August of 2014. Not to belabor the point, but I think at this point I would refer the follow-on right now to one of the testifiers that I understand is here from the OLA.
That sounds good. Mr. White, if you were here. And with that, Mr. White, if you want to give us just a minute with Representative Sundin and Swedzinski joining us, we are now official. We have a quorum. So I will ask Representative O'Driscoll if he would be so kind as to move the minutes from the last meeting.
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes from our previous meeting.
Any questions or comments about said minutes? Seeing none, those in favor of approval of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. With that, Representative Albright, I will move your bill, House File 544, so that it is properly before us. And we also have what I believe is an author's amendment.
It is, Chair.
The A2 amendment. Members should have that in their packets. Do you want to tell us briefly what that is? I'll move the A2 amendment, and we can try to get the bill in the shape that the author would like it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of follow-on conversations with regard to streamlining the process for low-income families to have access to these programs, as well as a number of other programs that necessarily might be purview to their situation, we believe it's much more appropriate to create a streamlined approach, more of a one-stop shop for these folks, and so the author's amendment refers it to human services as opposed to administration.
Thank you, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize, I hadn't seen the amendment before, and I know we don't have rules to file it, but so rather than moving the program from Commerce to administration, you're talking about moving from Commerce to Human Services. Is that correct?
Representative Atkins, that is correct.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Albright. How many people are we talking about?
Representative Albright.
I don't, Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, I don't know the particular number that are affected, although One of the functions of the DHS is the Office of Economic Opportunity that works extensively with community action councils, and that was one of the rationales for redirecting it towards human services.
Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins.
Representative Albright, how many employees are we talking about moving from Commerce to now Human Services?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, I don't believe that there is a transfer of people. I believe there are people at Human Services that will take up this responsibility given the nature of their work with federal and state programs of similar nature. But I'm certainly happy to follow up with you on that question in the future.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Albright, how many people do it now? I'm just trying to get my head around how big of a move. How many people actually administer the LIHEAP program that you're trying to move?
I believe Representative OOL probably understands the number.
Okay. Mr. White, if you could identify yourself for the record, if you can shed some light on this, we'd appreciate it.
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members, I am Brad White, a financial audit director with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. It's a fairly small unit. I know the staff we work with, it's got to be a unit under 10 individuals, a program director, but the most important individuals are what we call program monitors. They go out to service providers and actually validate eligibility. That's a big thing they do, and I know there are three of those employees in the unit. But the department will have to speak programmatically how many other employees are part of that unit itself.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Albright, how much money are we talking about? So I've got now from the OLA roughly the number of employees, but how many, is it hundreds of thousands, millions?
Representative Albright or Mr. White?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins. In fiscal year 11, it was way as high as $155 million, and it dropped to $108 million in fiscal year 12. The past two fiscal years, it's measured at about $118
million. Okay. Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, are you talking about a physical move?
No, just the responsibilities for processing the claims and the program out to the people that need it.
Representative Atkins.
I think for now that holds me. I have actually a number of questions about how he plans on doing it. Well, actually, you know what? I guess one more quick one.
Sure.
And that's the time period that would be necessary, Representative Albright. How long do you think it would take?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, I understand that the process for claims during the summer months is probably one of the heaviest times because of the work that's done in preparation for the winter season as well as for the other programs. So I'm certainly appreciative of that, but right now it is for, I believe, a July 1 start.
Okay, so Representative roughly, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So roughly, give or take, 90 days.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that would be my understanding as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions on the amendment? Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, in a recent article that I read where you discussed your initial proposal before the amendment, and then again here today, you mentioned that you thought this was necessary in order to promote transparency, and just now you mentioned ineffective administration of the program. I'm wondering how your solution, moving it to Human Services, creates any more transparency than at present and is any more effective in its administration.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Applebaum, I think that the point served by the legislation is to ensure that those that are most in need of these programs are effectively served, and I'm of the belief that by the testimony that Mr. White will provide, that the effectiveness of the program in the last two or three years has fallen off substantially in terms of the citizens served and for the purposes of the efficiency of the program. So that in and of itself, I believe, provides transparency. Taking it out of Commerce and to Human Services, I think because of their understanding of programs of this nature, also provides for an understanding that we won't arrive at a situation in follow-on years to be sitting here dealing with the same types of oversight issues that have prevailed in the last three OLA audits of the program.
I have a follow-up. Now, do you know if modifying the administration in a way that you propose would put in jeopardy the federal funding associated with the low-income energy grant program.
Representative Albright.
Representative, Mr. Chair and Representative Applebaum, it's my understanding that there would be no jeopardy in moving it to Human Services. I would even suggest to say that where it stays may put the program under jeopardy for some of the deficiencies that have been observed by the OLA reports in the last 3 years.
Representative Applebaum.
But you don't know for certain.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Applebaum, I do not know that for sure.
You good? One more question, and then I'll hold till after the other testifiers. But I was wondering, Representative Albright, will this transfer to Human Services result in the interruption of any assistance to low-income people? We mentioned the timeline earlier. Are you cognizant of that fact, and will this in any way have any possibility of interrupting services to people who are really relying on this program?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Applebaum, my crystal ball is no clearer than yours on that matter, and I would suggest to you that the administration of this program is paramount. The obstruction or interruption of services is something that I think professionals on both organizations can work through, but I would make no guarantees to your question.
You're good,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was remiss, by the way, on behalf of certainly all the DFL folks, we wanted to express our condolences to Mr. Reynolds and his family. It's nice to have you back, John. I just had one other just sort of overarching question. What you indicated, Representative Albright, in your initial comments was that this is an issue in the last couple of years. My understanding is that the issue actually began in the mid-2000s, and it wasn't until the Department of Commerce got involved and started to solve the issue. At what stage the allegations that you're suggesting, at what time did those alleged misuse of funds begin?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, the timeline, I believe, does correspond with what you're saying. I'm only reciting for the benefit of brevity in this committee meeting the last three OLA reports, as well as the DHS report, as evidence of concern that the folks that are in most need of the services provided by these programs may not be served as well by leaving it in Commerce, and moving it to Human Services may provide for a better opportunity for the monies and appropriations through those two programs to be more efficiently transferred out and reported in terms of performance requirements by both agencies to either federal or state agencies.
Okay. Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, then to that point, Representative Albright, I'm trying to make sense of this. It appears that the problem arose, and the alleged misuse of funds actually arose under the previous administration, which was Governor Pawlenty's administration and that Department of Commerce. This Department of Commerce is now trying to remedy the problem. They've actually cited the group in question. I believe they issued an order requiring them to do certain things. It appears that you're aiming at the wrong folks. I mean, and perhaps I should just leave it at that. We'll give the department an opportunity. But it strikes me that if you're taking issue with somebody, it should have been with Governor Pawlenty in the previous administration and the previous commissioner, as opposed to this commissioner that set out to fix the problem. Just a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, Representative Albright, can you shed some light for me on how this will financially impact the Department of Human Services? Are dollars transferred along with the responsibilities?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson, as earlier discussed with Representative Atkins, we do not believe that it is a function of labor, the responsibilities for the processing of the requests, as well as reaching out to the communities that would be served by this, is a function that's been observed in three separate OLA reports, And what the language is really trying to do is make assessment for understanding of how we can most effectively utilize these programs. But to your point in terms of either labor or cost intrusions, as Mr. White has said, it is a small agency, a small number of people, and we believe by moving it to Human Services that they can process these programs with the people already installed in that agency.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you had conversations with the department or requested a fiscal note to that? If you're saying it's a small number, do we have a number?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson, we can certainly ask for that and provide that to you.
Representative Halverson, you're good. Representative Dean, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Albright, you had just mentioned earlier that the Department of Commerce and the impact on low income individuals regarding the LIHEAP program and their ability to be served well. Frankly, the Department of Commerce doesn't serve the actual program, right? It oversees the program, and the program is conducted by community action agencies throughout the state, a network of them, correct?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, that's correct. And I think to your point and to your question, I think the testimony from Mr. White will elaborate on a better answer for you.
Okay, and just to be clear, you know, I represent Minneapolis, and I know much of the controversy that has surrounded community action in Minneapolis, and a lot of the discussion and the things we're talking about today is a result of that, and that actually only equals 6.6% of the state's LIHEAP programs. So I'm really wondering if your goal is to really use a sledgehammer when a small tack hammer might be more effective.
Long legislative history of doing that, Representative Dean. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, typically when you do a major policy change like this, you sit down and meet with the leaders of the different departments, kind of talk about the pros and cons and what you see as obstacles and what the benefits are. Have you done that with the two departments?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Johnson, I have not, and that is my intention as this bill moves forward.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? Otherwise, let's go ahead and take a vote on the A2 amendment, get the bill in the shape the author desires, and then we'll hear from testifiers.
Mr. Chairman, just one clarification.
Representative Vann.
Where was the bill moved to go next?
I didn't say that because I didn't know, but what we're going to do...
I got a spot for it.
Well, it's I'm sure you do. It is changed a number of times during the day, and I believe the chair of the Jobs Committee, Representative Gunther, has requested it, so we're going to send it there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, Garofalo, the other G. With that, seeing no more questions on the A2 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The amendment does prevail. The ayes prevail. The amendment is passed. The bill is now in the shape that the author desires. Representative Albright, we've
thank
heard
you.
From you. And Mr. White, we appreciate your patience and thank you for helping us get some of those questions answered. With that, we'll let you go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Brad White, Financial Audit Director with the Legislative Auditor's Office. As part of our federal compliance audit work, we annually examine the low-income home energy assistance program at the Department of Commerce. As mentioned earlier, it measures in roughly under $120 million each fiscal year. The predominant share of funding is used to pay the heat bill for eligible low-income citizens. The Department of Commerce uses 32 service providers to process applications and determine eligibility based on income level, number of household members, and their heating costs. Once determined to be eligible, the Department of Commerce moves federal money directly to the utility providers to be credited against the homeowner's heat bill. In addition, based on the number of applications processed, the department also sends administrative funds to service providers to pay for the cost of the intake function. Overall, our recent commerce audits have found some relatively minor compliance concerns compared to what I would call question cost or questionable items that we have seen in the past. You should have a recap of our audit findings in your file. In fiscal year 13, we detected that the department made a $13 million error in its program obligations reported to the federal government. In fiscal year 12, the department charged $1 million of indirect costs to their federal programs without a federally approved indirect cost rate. They subsequently obtained federal approval. In fiscal years 11 and 12, you'll see that we covered additional stimulus funding provided by the federal government for home weatherization purposes, and we reported some concerns we had with service providers. But from an audit perspective, eligibility is the most important thing they do. It's the most important thing that happens. We pay close attention to eligibility monitoring performed by the Department of Commerce Energy Assistance staff. And overall, they do a very good job. Department staff examine service providers' procedures and documents, test applicant files to ensure they comply with federal program requirements, and to ensure that they have accurately updated information into a computer system called EHEAT. They perform site visits twice each year and develop a report to management on any concerns they have encountered. We review the department's eligibility monitoring and overall have found it to be effective. However, back in our fiscal year 11 audit, we reported a $1.3 million problem they encountered with crisis benefits inappropriately provided to homeowners by Community Action Minneapolis. Crisis benefits provide funding to distressed homeowners that have been disconnected or are at risk of having services disrupted, mainly due to unpaid balances. The department recovered about $300,000 of that amount and levied a fine of $100,000 against Community Action Minneapolis. Subsequent corrective action plans were closely monitored by department staff. As a result of recent concerns, we are currently reviewing the Commerce Commissioner's role in decisions made to continue to provide funding to Community Action Minneapolis, despite concerns raised internally by department staff that monitor the organization. I'm unable to speak about that review at this time until our work is completed. Mr. Chair and members, that concludes my remarks, and we'll answer any questions that I can.
Thank you, Mr. White. Questions, members? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. White, my question is going to be focused on Minneapolis. When you talk about some of the concerns that you had, were there any concerns in any of the other offices that administer LIHEAP funds?
Mr. White.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, the primary issue we encountered that year was Community Action Minneapolis only. We know they do test every service provider across the state of Minnesota. They're geographically spread, and they do cover them twice a year. Nothing came up as substantially concerning as Community Action Minneapolis did.
Other questions, members? Not seeing any. Thank you, Mr. White. We appreciate it. Next up, Mr. Arne Anderson. And Mr. Bennis, if you want to come down and at the same time, that would be... Whoever wants to go first, go ahead. Sure, one of the pages can hand that out for you. They're very good at keeping us informed and supplied here. Go ahead and grab a chair, and whenever you're ready, please proceed and let us know your name for the record and tell us why you're here.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Arne Anderson. I'm the statewide director of the Statewide Community Action Association, also known as Minnesota Community Action Partnership. In the handout that is coming around, we have a cover letter that addresses a little bit of why we're here today, just to offer a few comments on program implementation. We have a great deal of experience with multiple state agencies, and we have experience delivering these programs for a number of years. Also included is a statewide map of community action agencies. Many people know their local community action agencies, but they never see the statewide picture. Community action agencies are private, nonprofits, independent corporations. Our association is a voluntary membership association. The following page is what makes community action agencies unique. It's their board. Maximum feasible participation of low-income citizens, one-third low-income citizens working together with local elected officials. One of the things, there are a lot of perceptions and misperceptions about community action agencies. Some people may find it interesting that on local community action agency boards, for example, Representative Bruce Anderson, now Senator Bruce Anderson, sits on his board. And as of last night, I believe that former Representative Mike Beard, now Commissioner Beard, is the newest member of his local Community Action Agency board. For history buffs, it included a page on how the one-third board composition was implemented. It was Governor Al Quie in 1967 who passed this amendment in Congress. And we believe that this is really the secret sauce of community action agencies. It was my pleasure to have lunch with Governor Quie a couple of weeks ago. And at 90 years old, he's still as sharp as a tack, and he still believes passionately in the local control of community action agencies and the value of that low-income component of the board. It's my pleasure now to introduce to you Mr. Bob Bennis, who's chair of our state association. He has some brief comments prepared, and that's what we have to offer today.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Welcome, Mr. Bennis.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Bob Bennis, and I work with Lakes and Pines Community Action Agency out of Mora, Minnesota. Lakes and Pines delivers both the low-income weatherization program as well as the low-income heating assistance program, along with a variety of other programs that assist low-income families in becoming self-reliant. I'm not here to speak either for or against House File 544, but I am here to offer perspective as a service provider and a client advocate. First, I must say, as a provider both of weatherization and the low-income energy assistance program, on the face of the actions this bill proposes, it appears to be pretty straightforward. However, based on our experience, we wanted to be, you to be aware of some of the possible complications for service providers of low-income Minnesotans. Our experience this heating season has been that with the propane crisis of last winter, applications for energy assistance have been coming in record numbers and coming in very early. If this trend of record numbers of applications arrive in the first couple of months of the program were to continue into 2016, a great deal of importance would be put upon the initial startup. A July transition from one department to another while providers are trying to start up the program could cause a delay in a great many of low-income families in providing heating assistance in the fall when it is most needed. In terms of the weatherization program, the current challenges, one of the current challenges in rural Minnesota is that local contractors that actually do the labor, there are very few of them, and the relationship with local community action agencies is somewhat tenuous. A disruption in the contracting process or administration of this program could sever those precarious ties, leaving the services all but impossible to deliver. As a local provider on behalf of our association, I would ask the committee to very carefully consider any change in the delivery system of weatherization and energy assistance, and to do so from the client, our client, your constituent perspective to the greatest degree possible. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you, Mr. Bennis. Questions, members, for either one of our testifiers? Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Bennis. Well, thank both of you. Mr. Bennis, or either one, I guess, can answer this. How many people are we talking about? You talked about, you know, could cause a delay in heating assistance for low-income families. Is there 100 families on this program or 1,000 families or a few more than that?
Whoever wants to, Mr. Bennis, if you want to.
Well, I maybe Arnie can give you a total of statewide. I can talk about my local agency. We serve about 12,000 individuals in a 7-county area geographically. Well, you've got the map pretty much between Minneapolis and Duluth.
Thank you.
And I'm one of 26.
Mr. Anderson, do you have a statewide number for us?
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, depending upon whether it's individuals or families, I believe the numbers are 150,000 or maybe 300,000, but that would be a fact that the department could easily speak to. Large number.
Yeah. Thank you very much, guys.
Other questions, members? If not, I think we have, thank you, gentlemen, we appreciate it, and I think we probably have somebody from the department. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Actually, would like to offer Amendment A1 at this time.
Sure. Do we have an A1 amendment?
I'm passing it over to you now, so if the pages could come and help hand it out. We also have some supporting documents to provide regarding the amendment as well.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A1 amendment to House File 544, I think, sort of fits in this whole notion on we have to be careful of what we do with government. As outlined on A1, I'll read it to you. It inserts after... before line 7, responsibilities, inserts an A, and then after line 10, it inserts a B that says, responsibilities relating to election policy, including jurisdiction over legislation relating to National Popular Vote Interest Compact, are transferred from the House Committee on Government Operations and Elections Policy to the House Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration for so long as the chair of the House Committee on the Government Operation is employed as a lobbyist for National Popular Vote, and then some other things change. And the intent of this, of course, is that we have a situation where one of our chairs works for a firm who is a lobbyist with the National Popular Vote, and it would seem appropriate to not have that chair sitting in judgment of legislation. And I realize that this legislation was last year, and that currently there isn't a bill been introduced this year. But one of the chief principals of that firm is still currently registered as a lobbyist for National Popular Vote.
And Representative Dean, while we do have the widest purview of, we think, any committee in the legislature, I'm not entirely sure that this is something that we want to be covering in the Commerce Committee. And I think that if this is something you have a concern with, it would more properly be, I don't know, bring it to the attention of the minority leader and the majority leader or the another committee. I don't know that this really fits into what we're trying to do today.
You know, I'm still trying to figure out what we're trying to do today because it seems that, again, and I'll keep harking back to Community Action Minneapolis, that we're talking about throwing out the baby with the bathwater, and the Commerce Department has addressed a lot of the issues. The agency, the particular agency for which there's been great concern about, is no longer in operations. The services have been picked up by some of the other community action offices, and I don't think that this is an issue of oversight of the Commerce Department. And in the same way, I believe that concern about a chair of a committee is something that needs to have a conversation.
Representative Dean, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but again, I don't know that this bill or this committee is the appropriate place to do that. Representative Atkins, did you have a question or a comment?
Mr. Chairman, I guess more of a question. I don't know, and I'd look to, we have our senior or emeritus status chair of this committee in Representative Davids. I don't know that we've ever had germaneness be an issue in this committee. We just vote them up and we vote them down. But if germaneness is now a concern, just on that face, and by the way, I don't like the bill, I don't necessarily like the amendment, but in terms of their relative relation to one another, they seem to both be on the same point. There's an allegation by Representative Albright that there's been some misuse or lack of oversight or something relative to that regarding an agency, and he wants to move responsibilities for that someplace else. I take issue with that because I think you're, as these gentlemen here on behalf of the CAP agencies pointed out, you're messing around with 150,000 or 300,000 families that may have a delay in their heating come fall to score, I think, some political points. That seems to be what this bill is about. In fact, I don't believe, Mr. Chairman or Representative Albright, that there's even a Senate companion for this bill. If there is, just raise your hand, but I don't see your... So there is now? Because there wasn't yesterday.
Representative Albright?
But... So I'll take your word for it that there's now a Senate companion. But this seems to go to the same point. I believe that the handout that I saw alleges that the chair of the commission or the committee is a paid lobbyist. It's a Tea Party group, I believe, that said that. If that's in fact the case, and I don't know that it is, then perhaps that sort of thing shouldn't go there. But that's exactly what the point of the of Representative Albright's bill is. Is it not?
Well, Representative Atkins, it's not entirely the same, and I'm not saying that we ever want in Commerce to have a germaneness ruling. And I think if Representative Dean wants to continue off this amendment, we'll let him. I'm just thinking, the point might have been made and we can move on. And I don't think it's entirely the same because we're talking about a different committee and a member of the House in terms of, as opposed to a Department of State Government that we happen to have some oversight over.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I think the same would hold true with regard to Representative Albright's bill. I think the point has been made and it's time to move on. So I'd ask, in fact, I think it's the highest motion of all that we just move to table the or lay over this bill. And if you guys want to pursue it again at some point and try to keep doing this, you can try to bring it back. But for now, I'd move, and I believe that's non-debatable, I'd move that the bill be laid over.
Representative Atkins moves that House File 544 be laid on the table. And it is, I believe he's correct, that it is not debatable. Those in favor of laying this on the table signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Division.
The motion does not prevail. Division having been called. What do we do for a division in the committee? We just raise hands? All those in favor of Representative Atkins' motion signify by raising your hand. You got the tally? Representative Sunday. Those opposed to the motion to lay this on the table signify the same sign.
So partisan here.
Well, you started it.
The motion does not prevail. And Representative Davids, I believe you had a comment to the Dean Amendment.
And not necessarily, Mr. Chairman, the Dean Amendment, but I think we should get on with it and vote it down. Representative Atkins was correct, or somebody said that you don't have germaneness in committee. That is correct. So it doesn't have to be germane. We'll just vote it down. But something we also don't do, according to the rules, is we don't question member intentions. That was Representative Atkins made some very inappropriate remarks in my mind. I've made many in my time and continue to. But with that being said, we don't question members' intentions as far as what the purpose of the bill is. We debate the bill and we vote it yay or nay. We do not question members' intentions in committee or on the floor. That's Mason's.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Atkins.
Perhaps Representative Davids could point out how I question any members. And now you're questioning my motives. I don't think I questioned anyone's intentions at all. I talked about the relative nature or the relationship between the amendment and the bill. If you can tell me how I question a member's intentions, I'd sure appreciate it, Representative Davids.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids.
Former Chair Atkins, you made the comment that this is here strictly for political reasons. And that's questioning motives and intentions, and that was inappropriate. And so, germaneness, we'll just vote the Dean Amendment down, but we shouldn't be questioning motives or intentions.
Well, Representative Davids.
Chairman, thank you, Representative Davids. If I might, Mr. Chairman, I believe that's what the bill is intended to do. I have no idea if that's what Representative Albright's point is, but that seems to me to be all that the bill accomplishes. So I do question the bill itself. And I question anybody that would support a bill like this for that reason. It seems it's purely calculated to put at stake the well-being of 150,000 people in Minnesota just to score some cheap political points. That's all I've heard thus far is testimony in support of that fact, not in support of anything that would make any sense for moving this from one department to another. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Representative Dean, do you have any final comments on your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. I think that one of the issues that we need to be careful of here is when we are offering things in a committee, especially a committee like this, there are certainly opportunities to call out many other factors that may not always be going as smoothly as we thought and as we hope. The people in state government work very, very hard. I am convinced that Representative Sanders and the people at his firm work really, really hard. And there are some times when things come up that need to be addressed and they should be addressed in the appropriate manner, not, again, where a tack hammer would do, hit it with a sledgehammer. So with that is the comment at this time. Well, no, I'm not going to withdraw it. We'll let this go to the vote.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for a roll call on both the amendment and the bill.
Representative Atkins asked for a roll call on the amendment and the bill. Seeing no other questions on the amendment, Representative Dean moves the A1 amendment, and there is a roll call having been requested.
Chair Hoppe?
No.
Representative
Woodruff? No.
Aye.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Dean?
Yes.
Representative Halverson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Kreshev?
No.
Representative Loon?
No.
Loon?
No.
Representative Loonen?
No.
Representative Sanders?
Abstain.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Sundin?
Yes.
Representative Smolinski?
No.
Representative Teese?
No.
Let's see. By a vote of 6-10, the motion does not prevail. We are back on the bill, and with that, I think there are people from the Department of Commerce here, Mr. Briquetti or Commissioner, if you have somebody that wants to come down on this, I think that would be entirely okay and appropriate. Commissioner, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter, can you grab the water? I'm just dry.
Please thank proceed you. Whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chair, thank you for this opportunity to speak to the committee about the situation. Mr. Chair, this bill puts Minnesota's most vulnerable senior citizens, disabled, persons living on fixed incomes, and low-income families with children who face constant struggles in paying their heating energy bills at serious risk. The Department of Commerce, through its network of local service providers, there's 31 for the record, helps 150,000 households on average every year with support in paying these bills, including an average of 45,000 households with senior citizens, 50,000 households with members who are disabled, and 40,000 households with children under the age of 5. These folks live in your legislative districts. Commerce also helps many of these same households become more energy independent by offering weatherization services. Nearly 32,000 households have seen their energy bills become more affordable over the last 8 years. In the last 15 years, Commerce's administration of these programs, federally funding, has generally declined, yet the Department of Commerce has managed to serve all households requesting assistance and have done so with strong programmatic and fiscal oversight. During last year's most extreme winter, in the propane crisis, Commerce helped thousands of Minnesotans who heat propane and get access to fuel in crisis situations in almost every single one of your districts. We work directly with propane dealers across the state. We staffed a 7-day, 4-week hotline, at least 4 weeks, to coordinate assistance, adjusting income qualifications so that more people could get assistance, raising assistance amounts, and coming to the legislature for $20 million more because we needed assistance for these people. The Department of Commerce, the administration's, my concern with this bill is it risks and it poses to Minnesotans' most vulnerable citizens inevitable delays in service, confusion created for households, local service providers, energy vendors, and construction contractors, steep learning curves required of a different agency, impacts to the state's general fund in making such a move. It seems to me by dislocating the energy assistance staff from Commerce, the state would be hard-pressed to be able to handle a similar crisis as the one it did last year. Without those support services of the rest of the Department of Commerce, though, and our emergency powers to act quickly in the face of another crisis, Minnesota would have a serious problem next winter. HF 544 would put the state at immense risk if next winter's rivals last year's winter. These costs and risks cannot be justified in light of the false premise of this bill. This bill needlessly gambles with the security of 150,000 Minnesotans and is fiscally unsound. Representative Albright's February 2nd news release inappropriately states that, quote, the Department of Commerce under Commissioner Mike Rothman is currently under investigation by the Office of the Legislative Auditor in response to reports of misuse of more than $1 million of public funds by Community Action of Minneapolis, close quote. This is simply misleading and based on inaccurate information. In fact, the current OLA audit was requested by me as Commissioner of the Department of Commerce. My letter to the legislative auditor is available. I don't know if it's been distributed, but we have it with us. The Commerce Department took proper steps to address CAMS, Community Action Minneapolis, is giving too many benefits to citizen recipients in Minneapolis. I'm going to talk about that for a few minutes, but before that, I want to talk a little bit about the history of the departments and examples of its oversight. The Minnesota Department of Commerce has successfully built strong relationships with those you have heard testimony from earlier in the community action agencies, who are institutions in all of your communities. They are counterparts to ours that help us oversee and administer these programs in HHS, the United States Department of Health and Human Services, under the Energy Assistance Program, and as well the Department of Energy for the weatherization program. The Department of Commerce has swiftly taken action when issues have been spotted by my staff, and this includes a couple of very good examples. In October of 2009, Commerce auditors found discrepancies in payments to weatherization contractors at the Crookston-based agency. Throughout our investigation, it was determined that the agency's weatherization coordinator in that local community action agency program had authorized services to households and others in the community who were not qualified to receive assistance. In November of that year, Commerce terminated funding to Tri-Valley and identified neighboring agencies to provide services to those households. In March of the following year, Commerce notified the Inspector General's office of possible criminal wrongdoing and launched our own investigation using in-house market assurance investigators, those that are at the Department of Commerce.
Mr. Chair,
conclusion of our...
Representative Scott.
If I might interrupt you just right there. When I sat down for the committee, I think it was Representative Atkins was talking about in 2009 there was a problem with community action under the Pliny administration. And now I hear you taking credit for getting on top of that in 2009. Were you part of the Department of Commerce in 2009?
Representative Scott, let's let the commissioner finish and then we'll get back to that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner, please go ahead.
In March of the following year, we had notified the Inspector General. At the conclusion of the department's investigation, Tri-Valley was forced to repay over $250,000 of disallowed costs, and their contract to provide weatherization services was permanently revoked. These are the same staff that currently exists at the department. In fact, if you go back to prior administrations, whether it's an independent or in the one prior to this administration, The Department of Commerce staff has focused and monitored and closely, as you heard from the Office of Legislative Auditor, monitored these programs. When things came to my attention, I have a perspective which is not on my watch. In October of 2009, Commerce auditors found discrepancies in payments to weatherization contractors. The Department of Commerce staff identified in November 2011 instances of misapplied benefits, actually overspending of benefits by the Community Action of Minneapolis. And I want to be very clear about this, that what Community Action of Minneapolis did was it found people were eligible for benefits and then decided to give more money to those same people, actually spend too much and give that to the citizens of Minneapolis. The Department of Conduct did an investigation to determine the scope of the problem, and we implemented safeguards to protect fiscal year 12 dollars. In March of 2012, the Department of Commerce notified the executive director at that time that his agency had failed to comply with program and procedures, lacked proper internal controls, and that Commerce would be conducting heightened oversight and monitoring, and ordered CAM to engage and cooperate in corrective actions. Ultimately, Commerce recovered $300,000 by stopping the transactions dead in their tracks of the $1.3 million that we identified as misspent or overspent by Community Action, and penalized Community Action Minneapolis another $100,000. This was all done under the oversight and in cooperation with our federal partners, as well as the oversight, or at least monitoring, by the Office of the Legislative Auditor. The Department of Commerce also reviewed its own monitoring procedures and implemented additional internal controls under my instructions. And we had an independent auditor, Baker Tilly, do an audit. The following year, the Department of Commerce monitoring identified unreasonable delays in processing applications for assistance by CAM. The Department of Commerce staff provided intensive training to Community Action of Minneapolis to address processing inefficiencies and directed CAM to hire temporary staff from neighboring agencies to eliminate the backlog of applications so that residents could get their assistance during cold winter months. The Minneapolis Community Action had remained under monitoring and close supervision and corrective action until and when the events in August happened of 2014. That's when the Department of Human Services released its audit report, Department of Human Services audit report, of its federal funds that the Department of Human Services provides to Community Action of Minneapolis. I want to be very clear, those were not Commerce dollar funds. Those were funds that are administered in a separate Community Action grant fund program that Department of Human Services sends to Community Action of Minneapolis and other Community Action agencies. And that report contained serious financial issues with Minneapolis CAM's use of those funds from the Department of Human Services. When I saw that, and my staff saw that, the Department of Commerce took immediate steps to identify what action steps we found necessary to ensure that Commerce's program funds were appropriately being spent. Ultimately, this resulted in the Department of Commerce terminating both the LIHEAP and Low-Income Heating Assistance Program and the weatherization programs at Community Action in Minneapolis this past September. Now, I want to put this situation in appropriate context. Community Action of Minneapolis was not a new organization, but a pillar in the community of Minneapolis. Prior to terminating contracts for both energy assistance and weatherization in September of last year, the Community Action of Minneapolis and its executive director had run these programs for 23 years, spanning the administrations, as I had indicated, both of independent and Republican administrations. I want to be and because of the situation and the focus of this legislation, stand up for myself in a way. The administration, this administration, is the one that finally took action seeing these serious concerns, first through close monitoring and corrective action plans, and then with one month following release of the DHS's audit, termination of CAM's contracts, we actually, as it was reported in the press, seized the property of the Department of Commerce, the documents that were necessary to ensure the safety and security of the program. And at the same time, while we were doing all of this, we identified and contracted with an alternative service provider, two of them, one on the weatherization side and the other on the energy assistance side, so that at the point of termination, we would safely transfer the weatherization program and the energy assistance dollars to a new service provider, so that the Minneapolis residents would have a place to go when they needed energy assistance. Now, once we had the systems in place to transfer and make sure that, and you got to remember, this was in September. The fiscal year starts, or the funding starts October 1, meaning every one of your residents who get low-income heating assistance gets it starting October 1, and we had to have the program and alternative providers in place so that this could seamlessly happen in Minneapolis. After we had completed that, at the same time, the action steps we would take, I personally contacted the legislative auditor and asked him, in consultation with respect to our investigation and our own audit, to confirm that the department would proceed with its own audit of the Community Action of Minneapolis accounts and funds on the Commerce Department side for the energy assistance and weatherization. At the time of the termination, the Department of Commerce jointly and with the Department of Human Services filed a petition with the court to have a receiver put in place over Community Action of Minneapolis. And on November 17th, the receiver took over Community Action of Minneapolis, and it's now under the receivership and court-appointed supervision. For the purpose of doing a full and formal accounting under court supervision of the financial situation at Community Action, the dollars that were there, and to make sure that they're sorted out properly and paid to vendors, weatherization vendors, and anybody else who are owed any dollars. To remove any doubt about the appropriateness of the Commerce Department's actions, I asked the legislative auditor to conduct an audit of the administration and management of the LIHEAP and weatherization programs leading up to the contract terminations. It was incorrectly reported in the press about some of the information. And I want to be clear that the Department of Commerce itself is not under investigation. It's clear from the letter I sent to the legislative auditor. And ultimately, in fact, I believe that the concern or the issue is that it is Community Action Minneapolis that is the subject of multiple audits and the investigations. I believe we also have been very candid and offered to meet with this committee and the legislative, anybody here, with respect to this, and I offer and continue to do so, to meet with anybody, including Representative Albright, about the details to fully understand the impact and the implications of what this could do to 150,000 Minnesotans. There were questions asked earlier. There are 19.4, something like that, FTEs that we're talking about that would be lost under this proposal. So there's 10 in the energy assistance side, and then there's a bunch on the weatherization side. Now, the weatherization staff, I just want to point this out, are very technically, they're experts. They understand weatherization. They know how to do weatherization. They work with the weatherization vendors in all of your communities to make sure that weatherization is done appropriately for eligible individuals and as well in compliance with codes and with all of the information they would need. This would not be an easy lift. To conclude, I want to make sure that from your perspective and mine, The Department of Commerce has run effective, well-controlled programs serving some of Minnesota's poorest families for the last 15 years and would needlessly, I believe, place our state's most vulnerable citizens in harm's way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. We do have a few members with questions. Representative Davids was first, then Scott, and then Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Commissioner Rothman, I heard several times that we're putting vulnerable citizens at risk. If this bill is passed into law and signed by the governor, do you feel the Health or Human Services Department is incapable of administering the program? Because if we have a seamless transfer from Commerce over to Human Services, how are we putting 150,000 Minnesotans that are vulnerable at risk?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I don't believe it's possible to transfer the energy assistance program in the short amount of time that you would need, one, to get compliance with all the federal standards, two, to train individuals to understand how to do the energy assistance program, to transfer the internal controls to a new environment to ensure that the appropriate funds are going to the right place. The computer systems that are in place, the technology information that's necessary to transfer, confirm eligibility, to make sure that the funds are being transferred to the utilities, which are the ones that process the payments for each of those folks' bills. I can continue to go, but I don't think it's at all, I think it's nearly impossible to do that within the time given by this bill.
Representative Davids, you have a follow-up?
Well, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I think I have a little more confidence in Human Services than you do. I think they're a very capable agency at times. So I guess the point is I think your statement to say that this bill puts 150,000 vulnerable Minnesotans at risk is misleading at best. I think Human Services could do it, and I don't think this bill puts anyone at risk.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question for the Commissioner. Did you at any time attempt to extend Community Action of Minneapolis's contract?
Mr. Commissioner. Commissioner
Mr.
Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, could you be more clear about the question? I don't understand.
Representative Scott.
The purpose of your question.
Thank you. At any time did you attempt to extend Community Action of Minneapolis's contract since this whole upheaval?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Representative, there was, during this entire process, all Community Action programs were under renewal in the September timeframe. And if I might, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
All community action agencies throughout the state of Minnesota received their standard issuance, I guess it would be the contract. While those contracts were under renewal, the action steps I talked about earlier in late August and early September were already underway. Meaning we were looking into substitute providers for Minneapolis. We were looking at the contractual rights. We were looking at due process rights. We were looking at federal law and requirements. We were looking at a variety of things. So during that process, there would have been the processing of the contract, but we did not extend the community action contract. On the energy assistance side, and we terminated the weatherization contract.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Scott, follow-up?
No.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And by the way, Representative Davids, I think the Commissioner talked about jeopardizing heating assistance for low-income families, but the person that actually said it first was Mr. Besser from the Community Action Programs. He's the one, and I quote, said doing this could cause delay in heating assistance for low-income families. I think he represents 12,000 families in the... The other fellow talked 150,000 to 300,000. My question for Representative Albright, then, you heard an exhaustive number of steps that were taken. My question is, what specifically would you have done differently than the Department of Commerce did with regard to the Community Action Program in Minneapolis?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins,
Let me go back earlier to a comment that you and Representative David shared about allegations. My allegations are not intended to personally attack the commissioner. I hold him in high regard. It's a very difficult position. And to the extent that he would have taken umbrage at the press release, I apologize personally. It was not that intent. But to the extent that we, to the members that have expressed their concern, and as the testifiers have talked to the vulnerability of the people that are served by both of these programs, that is at the core of what we're trying to achieve here, is to make sure that their needs are best met. While there is, to some extent, a review, an investigation, you can choose your word that best describes the investigation, the review, or the undertaking that the OLA has taken of, at the request of the commissioner, these programs, and put them in a position where they are not stressed or under duress while that program is being undertaken a review until the final outcome is made, because it does subject those people most vulnerable and most needful of the program to interruptions by the very virtue of what's going on at Commerce right now.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Albright, what specifically, you've heard an exhaustive description of what happened at Commerce, what specifically would you have done differently than what Commerce did?
Representative Albright.
To the extent that there's observation about the OLA deficiencies, and if you take a look at the reports, I think that you'll find that in subsequent OLA reports there are repetitions of circumstances that repeat themselves in those. That is a concern of mine, that they are not being addressed appropriately. I would also go to the point of 3 points that this bill really goes to your point, is that we're trying to streamline the process for low-income Minnesotans to get benefits from the agencies that they are most in need of, to make sure that they're safeguarded from the elements, as well as safe shelter. To the extent that the commissioner invoked it, we are trying to make sure that politics are removed from the process as MNCAP is investigated. And so I certainly appreciate and respect him for requesting that investigation. And thirdly, just to make sure that we're going to repair the administration and the oversight of LIHEAP. If you take a look at the OLA reports as well as DHS, to his point, that was not of Commerce, but that was of the MNCAP. We need to make sure that we assure the trust that the folks that are most vulnerable have to these programs. And so in a sense, we are doing two things. We are making sure that the vulnerable amongst us, the most needful, are taken well care of, and in the meantime, we're safeguarding the good name of the commissioner and others by removing it from him until the investigation is thoroughly undertaken and completed.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Albright, and I agree with, I appreciate all that, all those concerns. My question is, what specifically would you do differently, or would you have done differently than what the Department of Commerce did in handling this situation?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, a response in a more not forthright but complete manner, and I refer back to the OLA reports as I've read them, to some of the outstanding issues, making sure that they don't repeat themselves. That would I would have attempted to make sure that those did not repeat themselves in a pattern that lead us to this point.
And Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier we talked about, Representative Albright, that it wouldn't move, and then we talked about 20 people, and then it talked about absorbed within Department of or DHS. The 20 employees that are currently doing this, are you proposing that they would be fired?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, I believe that is something that the two agencies would work out if this bill would be completed and signed by the governor in terms of the attrition and or the transfer of responsibilities and people from one agency to the other.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to give the commissioner an opportunity to react to that. I'll be frank, Representative Albright, I didn't actually hear anything that you would have done differently. That's why I asked the question three times. I heard the OLA report referenced. It was actually the commissioner that requested the OLA to look into it, and they were the ones making changes. And I'm curious if the commissioner wants to react to that point relative to the OLA report and who the investigation was of and so forth. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Commissioner, you're always welcome to respond. You certainly don't need to.
Mr. Chair, I actually do. Over the years, in working with the legislative auditor himself, I've asked him, if there's any issues with the department, please let me know and I'll take care of it. We'll work to address any issues. Even before I started at the department, and as we have gone and when we work with and collaborate with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And as the committee heard from the OLA staff, these reports had relatively minor compliance concerns. We generally do a good job, and monitoring has been effective. Simply because Representative Albright said this, that he wanted to make sure that these were addressed, I did too, and whenever we had these audits come in, all these items have been addressed. There isn't one, to my knowledge, that is outstanding. We are always working for improvements, and if there is one or two issues, I would make sure that our staff has done that. In fact, when I started in 2011, I may have testified this before, I asked for an internal, I hired a separate one FTE person to do internal controls for the entire department, and that's their job, 7 days a week for the amount of time that they're on it, and have included work with these two programs. To my knowledge, I don't, and the second point is, I don't know of current disruptions to any service providers that are a result of the Department of Commerce's work.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Atkins?
And this one's just a quick one. For Representative Albright, Mr. White from the OLA, and I quote, said, Commerce generally does a good job. Relatively minor concerns. Which of those concerns do you not believe have been addressed?
And was that for Representative Albright?
That's for Representative Albright.
Representative Albright.
To the extent that we have concerns, I will refer to three points. And in 2011, $1.35 million in funds was delivered to ineligible recipients. 2012, there was no proposal submitted to the U.S. Health and Human Services for indirect cost rates. And in 2013, Commerce did not complete an accurate financial report to the federal government for LIHEAP. To the concern that whether they've been addressed or not, to the commissioner's just recent statement about one FTE dedicated to internal controls, it would be my concern in terms of when was that person put on charge in terms of watching out for these things, and secondarily then, why do we seem to have on a regular basis, in my opinion, 1.35 is not a modest or even a minor amount of money, given the magnitude of people and that they serve. So I would say those three, to me, strike me as concerning going forward in terms of whether there we've got a trajectory or a pattern that's continuing to develop and whether or not they will be addressed or what will be the follow-on to the OLA report that has been requested by the commissioner.
Mr. Chair, same question for the commissioner. And again, Representative Albright, with due respect, my question was, which do you believe have not been addressed? And you harked back to the original concern, but my understanding is that they have been addressed. Is it your contention that they have not been addressed?
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, my contention is that it is a pattern, and the pattern has been successive over the number of years. Whether or not they have been remediated or corrected, my concern going forward, and that's why I think it's important to have this discussion, is whether or not 2014, 2015, if we will have continuation of certain additional concerns, went for a program that it is serving those most vulnerable amongst us.
Then, Mr. Chairman, for the commissioner.
Representative Atkins.
These concerns that arose based on the earlier testimony that arose during the Plenty administration, mid-2000s, commissioner, have you addressed now these concerns that Representative Albright's bill apparently targeted?
Commissioner Rothley.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes. On the 1.3, I've spoken to that already. We were the ones that identified, the Department of Commerce staff is the folks that identified it, and that $1.3 million was found to be overspent by Community Action of Minneapolis. And we discussed earlier all the action steps we took to stop that. We recovered $300,000, we penalized them $100,000, and as well, that activity, as the OLA audit staff had indicated, had already been audited. It's been audited, and we're in compliance, and our monitoring systems are in place. On the two other incidents, those are sort of programmatic incidents, and those were corrected at the time the OLA office was looking at us. For example, the indirect cost account and the other incident, and so each one of those have been addressed. And again, my expectation is that whenever these things are pointed out, we fix them and we move on.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Committee.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I just have a couple questions for you. The auditor had highlighted problems with the administration of LIHEAP in 2011, again in 2012, and 2013. And reports show that you had re-upped for a contract with the Community Action of Minneapolis just 20 days after the Department of Human Services had put out their audit, showing that there were significant problems. At what point would you have said, no, we're going to cut this off and we're no longer going to have you part of getting these grants out to needy people? What's your threshold for cutting off an organization that's abusing taxpayer dollars?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Representative, in the 2011 incident where they Community Action Minneapolis overspent funds, the department staff, in conjunction with auditors, determined and studied the situation and determined that the best course of action at that time was to do what we did. We stopped the $300,000, we penalized Community Action, and we put them on a corrective action plan. The corrective action plan was closely monitored to make sure that they fixed their deficiencies, which is what we did. And it was respect to overspending of funds. Throughout that time, the Department of Commerce hadn't seen, with respect to the department's funding, the kind of financial misspending of dollars that the Department of Human Services saw when they did their audit and report. So in August, when we saw the report of the misuse of funds at Community Action Minneapolis, while Community Action Minneapolis was already on a corrective action plan, we determined at that time and took steps to determine what would be the proper steps. And we determined that while what we need to do is we need to find that if we were going to terminate, we would have to find an alternative service provider for both the low-income heating assistance program and the weatherization program. And that we, if we were to terminate it, we would do it in an appropriate fashion. And that was what we did. We terminated Community Action of Minneapolis. I think your reference again to the process with respect to what we were going to be doing with Community Action at the same time, with respect to, I think, the early question about the renewal of the contracts, where we had a pending process in place with all the Community Action agencies, including Community Action of Minneapolis. And as representatives have already indicated, my major concern and our department's concern was making sure that the services were going to be and the benefits were going to be provided to Minneapolis residents. So while we considered and then eventually terminated within weeks the contracts, we had the substitute providers in place. And again, what we saw in the DHS report was misspending of dollars, and it was just, in effect, the last straw.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Anderson, follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you actually put out a contract to extend their contract, and it wasn't until the report became public that you then decided to terminate it. So I was just curious if $300,000 wasn't the threshold, $800,000 wasn't the threshold. Maybe it just took this all coming to light to the public. My last question, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your time, is what it's been reported in several different articles that the reason that you didn't want to terminate the contract with Community Action Minneapolis is because you were concerned about the political ramifications and that staff didn't understand the political ramifications, even though they had been raising red flags that this is a problem. Can you tell me what is your concern? What are the political ramifications?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the statements in the press, and as I have indicated to the press about what I had been, what the department and the staff and leadership have been looking at, are simply not true. What I was, and what I've said and I testified today, is that Minneapolis Community Action is an institution within it, Minneapolis. Institution, and meaning that it had delivered services and provisions to Minneapolis residents for many, many years, as well as the other community action agencies in all of your communities. And those are the considerations that I'm talking about, and those are the ones that are utmost in my mind.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Representative Dean, is it a brief question?
It's actually very brief, and it's as much of a comment as a question. Mr. Chair, Commissioner, and actually this would be to Representative Albright as well. When I look at these numbers, and I think of $155 million worth of programs, 25 different agencies, many of them administering numerous programs, servicing over 150,000 households, and maybe this would be for the Mr. White from the auditor's office. I don't know how it would be actually possible to not find some problems and some mistakes. With that said, I want to thank the commissioner and the work that they've done to try to make sure that those individuals who had previously received service from Community Action Minneapolis, that the number of those individuals that went without service was minimized as much as possible, and thanks for your efforts. Thank you.
Representative Dean, thank you. Commissioner Rothman, thank you very much. Members, with that, we are going to Representative Albright, if you want the final word.
I'm only going to reiterate my concern that what we have before you is a change in venue that will protect those that are in most need of the services provided. Reflecting upon the conversations here, and what Chair Representative Atkins said in terms of one thing that I would do, and I think the Commissioner also alluded to it, is I certainly would not have attempted to renew the CAM contract after it was clear that there were some indiscretions. But I do hope that you'll support this as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Albright. I will renew my motion that House File 544, as amended, be referred to the Jobs and Energy Finance Committee. Roll call having been requested, clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hoppe.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Applebaum.
No.
Representative Atkins.
No.
Representative Davis.
Yes.
Representative Dean.
No.
Representative Halverson.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Kreisha.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Nope.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Lunin.
Yes.
Representative Sanders.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
Yes.
Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Sundeen.
No.
Representative Swazinski.
Yep.
Representative Teese.
Aye.
The motion does prevail by a vote of 12-7. House File 544 is on to the Jobs and Energy Finance Committee.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, members, and Representative Albright. Members, we are running a bit short of time here, but we will move on to Representative Swidzinski, who is running up to the front for House File 123. Representative Swidzinski, if you'd want to go ahead and move your bill, we will
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll have House File 123 before the House Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Representative Sudzinski. The bill is properly in front of us. Please tell us what it's about and why we should vote yes.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. House Bill 123 is a pretty straightforward bill. It simply talks about warning and warning labels when it comes to this Minnesota State Lottery. As you know, the Minnesota State Lottery is the lone entity that is owned by the taxpayers, essentially, of Minnesota. And, you know, I believe that we have an opportunity to take a leadership role when it comes to the lottery and to warn our constituents and the customers of it, of the potential pitfalls of gambling and the opportunities that it has for winning and from the odds perspective and down the list. And I know we're at a little clip of a pace, so we'll keep it short, then we'll keep her moving. So.
Thank you, Representative Swidzinski. And we do have Mr. Grassl, if you want to work your way down, Representative Atkins has a question while you're on your way.
It's a really quick question. Mr. Chairman, Representative Swidzinski, what is the percentage of problem gaming as a result of the lottery versus casinos versus scratch-offs versus bingo?
Well, it's not, you know, as a percentage, I don't know the exact percentage, but I know it's not as large as some of the other portions of gambling throughout the state, but it is within the purview of the legislature. You know, I think when we look at the other portions of gambling, whether it be charitable gambling or some of the other forms of gaming within the state, you know, I feel that this particular area is within our purview, and we're looking at it as a yeah. So that's what we're talking about. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Mr. Grassl.
Mr. Chairman, Jake Grassl, Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. First off, before I start my testimony, I'd say that 11% of calls to the gambling hotline for addiction come from the Minnesota Lottery. To answer that. Mr. Chairman, on a variety of products, we require fair marketing in Minnesota. And my day job as an attorney, I represent retailers. On store products, on toys, we have to have warnings. On cigarettes, on alcohol, we have warnings. There's one thing that we don't have a warning or don't have messaging properly on, and that's something that does cause a ton of harm to Minnesota citizens. And it's not just a localized harm, which many people would argue. Tell that to the churches, to the businesses, to people who have their money embezzled by people who have problems with gambling. So we encourage this commission, or excuse me, this committee, to support this bill, move it forward. This is an emerging issue. The lottery has looked at the UK recently for a lot of things. The UK is expanding their messaging on the awareness of problem gambling. Tennessee right now has a bill up that is asking for far more draconian messaging than this bill. And generally, I would say, you know, to those who say, well, this is a nanny state bill, it truly is not. This is the state government that is a retailer, marketer, and regulator doing this. We need to make sure that we put proper messaging to protect those who may be harmed by this. So I encourage you to support this bill and move it forward.
Thank you, Mr. Grassl. Representative Atkins has a question for
you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Grassley. So you heard my question of Representative Swidzinski. Number one, do you know the answer to that question? Number two is, would you then support, assuming that it's the problem gambling instances is significant for other forms of gaming, would you support this sort of bill or warning be used in those instances as well?
Mr. Grassl, was that the 11%? Was that for lottery specifically, did you say?
The 11% was for the lottery specifically. Okay. I believe the lottery is here and could testify to that. That is their numbers.
Okay.
You know, to the purview of if a bill comes forward, we'd be willing to analyze any bill that discussed the advertising of gaming as you, that comes first to me.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Grassl, my question is just simple. Would you apply the same warning to casino gambling and scratch-offs?
Mr. Grassl.
Exactly the same language. Just insert the words casino and scratch up.
To the extent the committee is able, I think our group would be supportive of that. I'd want to ask our members.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Swidzinski?
Sure. Representative Atkins.
Would you entertain that as an author's amendment?
Representative Swidzinski.
You know, my biggest Mr. Chair, you know, I appreciate the idea of it. You know, I do question the ability of us to actually have that oversight. I think we maybe have some potential constitutional flags that may get raised. Well, it has everything to do with it. But if that could pass some sort of a litmus test, then I think we were talking about some constitutionality yesterday with some rules and things as that. And so I think that would be my answer to that, sir.
Thank you. Let's jump right into amendments because that's fun. I don't know who had it. I don't know who's got the A3 amendment.
Can we, Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
if the lottery's here and can answer that one question real quickly, I'd appreciate it here. I'm just, I thought there was somebody invited from the problem gambling.
There might very well be. I was going to take amendments and then see if anybody else wanted to testify.
I don't want the lottery. I'd rather have it be from problem gambling.
Is there anybody from...
11% for the lottery. Does anybody know what the percentage...
Come on down. I was going to wait till after amendments because we might run into more problems. But come on. You might as well do it right now. Welcome, sir. Please state your name for the record and start whenever you're ready. If you can help us out here, we'd be greatly appreciated.
I will try. My name is, John Dinsmore. I represent the Department of Human Services. I serve as the interim director of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Division. And the title of interim is well-earned. I've been called by the commissioner to serve in this capacity. When I'm not here, I'm also the director of Otter Tail County Human Services in Fergus Falls.
So well, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And to the question that was posed, if I could ask for... repeated the question again?
Go ahead, Representative Ack.
Mr. Chairman, the question is, and I've heard testimony that 11% of the problem gaming is as a result of the lottery. Do you know what the percentages are for the, whether it's casino or scratch-offs or bingo or sports gambling, I don't know, whatever.
Mr. Dinsmore.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative. First of all, the Department of Human Services, our role is we oversee the problem gambling program, and that includes a hotline. And so I've got some information as far as our hotline is concerned, sure. And it's for a two-year period from 2012 to 2014. Sure. And during that time, the first year we received about 674 calls. The second year through July of last year June was 760 calls. Of those calls, the breakdown included the four primary problems that were presented by the callers related to casino slots, about 37%, casino cards was 20%, pull tabs, 7% of the callers.
Could you slow down just a little bit? I got casino slots, 37.
37%. That's right. Casino cards were 20%. Pull tabs were 7%, and calls related to lottery were 5%. Now, this was for the first year, 2012 to 13, and the percentages were slightly different for the second year. If you'd like for me to share those, the casino slot calls, these were the four primary problems again, and this was from 2013 to 2014 state fiscal year. Casino slots, the calls were 18%, so a considerable drop. Casino cards were 17%. Pull tabs, 5%. And lottery call-related calls were 4%. For your information, these calls were... callers would oftentimes report on more than one form of gambling issues that they were having, and they might include other state lotteries as well.
And Mr. Dinsmore, maybe that was the answer I'm looking for, but I'm not a math guy, but when I add up those last set of numbers, that's 44%.
That's correct.
And is that a reflection of people calling for different issues, or is there something big out there?
And there, another stat that we have is that 29% of the calls reported gambling activity is unknown.
Got it. Representative Atkins, does that answer the question?
That does, and thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Representative Swidzinski.
And Mr. Chair, I think when we're talking numbers and we're talking percentage of folks with problem gambling, we also need to think of the other flip of the coin. When we're scratching the surface of this issue, that it's also the amount of advertising done that's important. You know, because if you look at a cumulative, you look at all the different ads that you may hear within a day, I think whether it be some of the gaming or whatever, or the state lotto, it all adds up. And I think, my guess is we'd be looking at from a total budget of advertising dollars spent statewide, that my guess is Minnesota State Lottery is a large portion of that. And that has it puts reverberations through the marketplace. It might drive folks into different markets or whatever. It may not always benefit itself. But that's what we're also getting after, is the advertisement portion and what percentage that is of the total market of gambling-related advertisements throughout the state.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Atkins.
How much, Representative Swedzinski, how much is that?
Representative Swedzinski.
I think that'd be a good question for a person from the
like Mr. Kwapik from the lottery?
Mr. Kwapik, yeah, from the lottery.
Oh, what a coincidence. He's standing here.
Mr. Chair, if we've got representative of the, I mean, the issue then would be on the, Representative Swedzinski brought up the point that the, how much the tribes advertise in terms of monetary size, and then the how much, I don't think charitable is even allowed to advertise, are they?
Word of
last
mouth.
I checked. Yeah. Thank you.
So, Representative Atkins and Representative Swedzinski, do we want to have a little update from Mr. Kwapik right now?
Are we know the amount that he referenced.
Mr. Kwapik, do you want to come out and help us out? Thank you, Mr. Dinsmore. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you back in the committee, sir. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chris Kwapik from the Minnesota State Lottery. I apologize. My executive director had to leave to go to another hearing in another chamber that will not be mentioned.
There is no other chamber, and no need to apologize.
Mr. Chairman, we have to question his judgment.
To the direct question about the number of dollars marketed, I can get that for you. I don't have it in front of me for what the lottery does, but I'd be more than happy to provide that to you. But I do have some general comments to the bill overall. So,
Representative Atkins, can we get that information at a later date? I have a feeling this is not the last gaming bill that we're going to hear for the year. Are you okay with getting that from Mr. Kwapik down the road here? Thank you.
Either and from him as well as if I think it was Representative Swedzinski that made the point, if he could request of those other entities, that'd be
good.
Good
idea.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Kwapik, please give us your remarks.
All right, thank you. So just thank you for your time. I must come before you today to respectfully oppose House Bill 123 in its current form. The lottery has a strong history and tradition of supporting the state's fight against problem gambling. The information requested in House Bill 123 is already provided by the lottery, either by statute or lottery policy. The lottery currently offers all information requested on our website. The back of every single ticket that is sold, either scratch or draw games, such as Powerball and Mega Millions, purchased features the following. It has the odds of that particular game, the rules of that game, our website address, as well as the Minnesota Problem Gambling Helpline phone number that was referenced earlier that's run by the Department of Human Services. Annually, the lottery contributes $2.23 million to DHS and its compulsive gambling program, and we've also had a very strong partnership with the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance. But to the bill at hand, we have a few issues with the way it's currently written. Due to the fact that our games change on a weekly basis, including a range of odds and advertisements, would run the risk of being out of date. So, for instance, you could have a game that's running this week that runs at about 2.65 odds of winning. Next week it would be 1.0 odds of winning. So, including that in every single advertisement would be very challenging for us in the way that we dispense that information to the entities that would run our advertisements. The other information is already, like I said, being done on the back of every single ticket. Furthermore, to my knowledge, the lottery has never had a complaint about misleading players through our advertising, and we currently have language and statute preventing us from doing just that. Again, in the bill, when it comes to the amount of space or time used to advertise, we have a problem with the fact that it would place a huge restriction on the way we market our products compared to other products. As you can see, I've got some handouts. There's just a couple of, and I'll just show it quickly. You talk about the fact that it would take up 25% of an advertisement. I mean, just to show what that would actually look like. I mean, if we're just advertising with a logo, say at a sports game or something like that, it would be, you know, that much information. You know, you compare that to products that was mentioned before, like cigarettes or alcohol, that do have warning labels And they do have warning signs on them, but theirs are quite smaller. You see the white portion down here is extremely smaller than what would be required of the lottery. So just we're very concerned that this targets only the lottery and none of the other legal forms of gambling or options in the state. Under this bill, no other gambling entity in the state would be mandated to require this information. And as data has shown, the lottery is one of the lesser addictive of forms of gaming, yet we do support as many problem gambling initiatives as we can throughout the state. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time. Thank you, Representative Zinski. I've met with you a couple times. We just have a very good open-door policy, but at this time we must oppose this.
Thank you, Mr. Kwapik.
I stand for questions.
Yeah. Any questions for the lottery for Mr. Kwapik? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Kwapik. Anybody want to claim the A3 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, in light of time, we've got three amendments we sort of sorted through over here. I'm going to withdraw the A3.
Okay.
So we've got an A2 and an A4 and an A5.
Okay.
Which ones have been submitted?
I've got the A5.
Okay. So why don't we pass out? Is that Representative Sandin, I think, has the A5? And then if the pages are okay, we can pass out the A2 and A4, which I think Representative Johnson has the A2 and Representative Halverson has the A4.
Okay. That sounds good to me. Representative Sundin, why don't you go ahead and move the A5 amendment. We'll discuss that one while the other ones are being handed out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we will get Representative Swidzinski a copy of this. If the pages have one, they can get to the author.
We're doing the A5.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the amendment to House File 123, Amendment A5.
All right, Representative Sundin, go ahead.
Everybody has that in front of them, I hope.
I think we do. It was in the
packet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what I'd like to mention first, that I'm not a big fan of warnings. We just had the one handout here from the smoking warnings that I've seen 4,000 times. I did the math. I used to smoke cigarettes. I've seen that warning 4,000 times. Didn't do a damn bit of good. But some warnings can do some good, and I like to think that this A5 amendment is kind of an added value to the House File 123, in that it provides warning to somebody that might be entering a website that they shouldn't be entering, that might be promoting sex trafficking of children, and this could actually. Be an aid to law enforcement. You know, this is another law that they'd be violating, and maybe I've watched too much Law and Order Special Victims, but this might be another tool that law enforcement could use to detain or prosecute sex traffickers or people that are after the most vulnerable in our society.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just really appreciate kind of where this amendment's coming from. Just, you know, being that the Lotto is kind of a state-run agency, we have an agency that we would be working directly with, would be Kwapik Mr. Van Hetten. Is there currently websites like this in Minnesota that are based in Minnesota?
I can't speak with any. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Swidzinski. I can't speak with any expertise to that matter.
Representative Sundin, excellent answer.
Yes.
Representative Swidzinski.
And my second question to the amendment would just be kind of how would you propose that this, you know, because there's no, or we don't know whether or not, how do we enforce, how would this potentially be enforced?
Representative Sundin.
That's a good question, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. And maybe we want some advice from counsel on this, or I don't know, Representative Swidzinski, if you were thinking of taking this bill to another committee, maybe it's something that could be worked on.
Yeah, that's probably
now
what
and
we
them.
Could do. Yeah, we could probably.
I think that's a good question, and I don't know that we have the good answer or the time for it. And Representative Atkins, did you have a question?
I just want to ask for a roll call, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids.
Does the lottery support the Sundin Amendment?
Representative Davids, good question, and Representative or Mr. Swidzinski, feel free to answer that, but that is a little bit out of the general purview of the lottery, and I don't want you to say anything that would get yourself
Mr.
in trouble.
Chairman, my question is to Mr. Kwapik.
Mr. Kwapik.
I can only say the lottery has no opinion on this amendment.
How do you like your new job?
Representative Switzinski. Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, and I guess to follow up on that question to Representative Sundin, how do we enforce what's in 123?
Well, Representative Dean, that's a good question, and I'm thinking maybe that's why we want to have this bill go to Chair Anderson's committee and answer some of these questions between now and then. I think that Representative Switzinski, what are your thoughts on this amendment? Are you okay with this amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Sundin has his heart potentially in the right place with this bill, and we obviously want to be able to protect people, especially the young, at heart, and I would recommend a yes vote on this.
Thank you. Representative Atkins, in that light, you want to keep the roll call on it?
Yes, please.
Seeing no other questions, roll call having been requested, we will vote on the A5 amendment.
Chair Hoppe.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Applebaum.
Aye.
Representative Atkins.
Aye.
Representative Davis.
Yes.
Representative Dean.
Yes.
Representative Halverson.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Grisha.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative Loon.
Yes.
Representative Loonen.
Yes.
Representative Sanders.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Slocum. Oh, sorry. Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Sundin.
Yes.
Representative Swazinski.
Yep.
Representative Tice.
I didn't do the math on that, but I'm thinking that the motion does prevail.
Can we do that one more time just to make sure? Sorry about that, folks.
By virtue of a unanimous vote to Representative Sundin, nice amendment. Representative Swazinski, good mood of cooperation. What, Representative Johnson, do you want to do your amendment next, the AA2 amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This continues the move towards warnings and advertising and promotional materials, and it's geared towards our United States Armed Forces. President Bush actually signed the Military Lending Act back in 2006 as part of a lengthy campaign to protect military borrowers from predatory lenders. And what this does is provide at a minimum to inform that the United States law imposes a payday lenders a 36% cap, as well as other restrictions and limitations.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Dean.
Ask a question.
Representative Dean certainly doesn't have a question, but I think that we have the same concern with this amendment that we did with the other ones in terms of, I don't know how you make that work. I don't know what you want to do, Representative Swinzinski. I'm not trying to greatly expand your bill, but maybe if we get an answer from staff, from council between now and Representative Anderson's committee, we can figure out how to make Representative Sundin's amendment and this amendment all apply in the bill. Is that okay with you, Representative Swazinski?
That would be fine, Mr. Chair. We take your direction.
Representative Johnson, is that okay with you?
The author is going to accept the amendment?
The author will accept the amendment, and you'll have to spend hours and hours and hours working with him and staff between now and the next committee stop trying to hammer out details on how this would be applied. Other questions, members?
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on this as well, please.
I think we've already accepted it.
It's been accepted.
It's been accepted. If he wants to have a roll call, we can have a roll call on it.
Please.
And he said please.
Chair Hoppe.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Applebaum.
Aye.
Representative Atkins.
Aye.
Representative Davis.
No.
Aye. Representative Halverson.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Grisha.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Loon.
Aye.
Representative Loonen.
Yes.
Representative Sanders.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Representative Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
By a vote of
all my friends are with me, Mr. Chairman.
The motion does prevail by a vote of 18-1. The amendment is adopted, That brings us to Representative Halverson, the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and may I incorporate a technical change to this?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. After the word shall on line 1.4, I'd like to insert provide the committee that funded the production, print, and distribution of the material.
That one might be... Mr. Queenan, do you have that amendment? Do you want to read that back to make sure we have that?
Mr. Chairman, members, starting from page 1, line 3, just to get context, advertising and promotional material adopted or published by a political action committee for a political campaign shall provide, is it provide the committee that funded the production and distribution that funded that material?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Halverson.
Perhaps it's provide the committee name.
Representative Halverson, in the spirit of amity and political cooperation we've got going on here, is this an amendment you would consider withdrawing and offering it in the next amendment with next committee stop with this wording in it? And we'll certainly do it if you want to here. I'm not trying to stop you from offering it. But if it's going to Representative Anderson's committee, and I don't know if you're on that committee or not, but we can, if you want to keep doing it here, we can. Otherwise, we can get somebody to offer it in the next committee.
Mr. Chair, I would like us to proceed so we can have the conversation, if we may.
Your
indulgence.
No, we can have the conversation. And if you could, we need to make sure we have the wording correct. So do you want to read it again one more time, and we'll make sure that we've got it right for the record?
After the word shall, on line 1.4, insert provide the committee name that funded the production, print, and distribution of the material.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't work.
Mr. Kleenan, do we have the wording right? Mr. McCormick? Mr. McCormick, do you want to come up and... Mr. Kwapik, we were just about to call on you for this one.
Madam Chair, Representative Halverson, I think what your intent is to delete, to insert this new phrase and delete the remainder of the sentence. So the advertising and promotional material shall provide the committee name that made it, and then that's it. The rest of the sentence goes away. And then I think it reads as an English sentence.
Mr. Kleenan, do we have the wording that correct that Representative Halverson wants?
Mr.
Do you want to read it back?
Oh, I was going to say I might be able to clarify intent a little bit more. So we are looking to have promotional and political action committee and political campaign material be subject to the same requirements in terms of the amount of advertising space that they have to declare who they are and who is funding the material.
Representative Halverson, would they have to put the odds of winning on there?
Well, that'd be good.
Mr. Kleenan, and in the interest of full disclosure, that came from Mr. Reynolds. If nobody would have laughed, I wouldn't have said a word, but I want to be fair. So, Mr. Kleenan, will you read that back one more time and Representative Halverson tell us if this is the wording that we're looking for, and then Mr. McCormick, make sure that we've got the right intent here.
Mr. Chairman, members, so as amended by this oral amendment, it would read, advertising and promotional material adopted or published by a political action committee for a political campaign shall provide the committee name that funded the production, print, and distribution of the material.
Representative Halverson, is that the correct wording?
That is the correct wording. And they would be subject to the requirements of paragraphs B, clause 1 and 2.
Okay. And thank you. Representative Swodzinski, do you want to comment on that?
I would just say,
Well, Representative Halverson, you know, I think this is something you could work on, and Representative Swedzinski, do what you will, but I think this one is somewhat different than the other, the Sundin and the other amendments, the Johnson Amendment earlier. I don't know that it really fits in the bill, and I think if it does, it probably has to go make another committee stop. But Representative Swedzinski, do with it what you will.
Can I ask for a roll call on this, please?
I was expecting that.
Yes. You know, I will let the individual members of the committee go in the direction they would like to go. So,
thank you, Representative Swedzinski. Seeing no other questions, roll call having been requested on the A4 amendment, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hoppe?
No.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Nope.
Representative Applebaum?
Yes.
Representative Atkins?
Yes.
Representative Davids?
No.
Yes.
Representative Halverson?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Kreisha?
No.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Noonan?
No.
Representative Noonan?
No.
Representative Sanders?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Sundin?
Yes.
Representative Swedzinski?
No.
Representative Tice?
By a vote of 7 to 12, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Members, with that, we are on to the bill. Unless we have any more amendments, I'm not aware of any more. Anybody in the audience want to come down and testify that hasn't spoken already for or against the bill? Seeing nobody rushing down, members, any final questions? Representative Swedzinski will give you the final word on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, you know, as we move forward, obviously this bill has expanded its scope quite a bit while its visit here in the Commerce Committee, and I'd appreciate your guys' consideration on this bill. My district, House District 16A, has the city of Granite Falls in it, and in Granite Falls we have a building organization called Project Turnabout. We have the Vanguard Center, which is housed in my district, which is the only residential gambling treatment center in the state. And folks travel from not only Minnesota, but across the country. And gambling is an issue. We have a large $500, $400 million jackpot going on in the state of Minnesota and across the country today. And you're not going to win. And I want to make sure that folks understand their opportunity.
Now you tell us.
Sorry. If you do, we're related. But at the end of the day, folks, this is about keeping families safe and understanding that gambling is an addictive activity, and that the state of Minnesota, I believe, has a unique opportunity and a unique chance at leadership when it comes to this area in advertising and the warnings in involved in it, and I'd appreciate your vote. So, thank you.
With that, Representative Swedzinski renews his motion that House File 123, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed and sent on to State Gov Finance. Members, thank you. Appreciate your forbearance. We went a little bit long. With that, the committee is adjourned.